Well, hi, everyone. If you have a Bible or device, I'd ask you to open it up to Luke 8, 1 through 3. That'll be our text today. And even though there are only three verses here, they are three very important and interesting verses about the ministry of Jesus and ministry in general. And so we're going to use them to help us frame what God has called us to do over these past couple years with the Forward Project. If you don't know what that is, I'll explain a bit as we go. But for starters, it's a generosity initiative that we launched about 2 years ago to raise $1.5 million to fund four different initiatives that we believe would allow us to multiply ministry around our whole region and reach more people for Christ. And so today we're going to take in some teaching from this passage. We're going to celebrate some of what God has done and those of you who have participated faithfully. And then we're going to give everyone a chance to finish well, to give a special financial gift to help us get across the finish line with these initiatives. So let's look at the text first. We're in Luke 8, right there at the beginning of the chapter, starting in verse 1. Soon afterwards, he went on through the cities and villages, proclaiming and bringing the good news of the kingdom of God. And the 12 were with him, and also some women who had been healed of evil spirits and infirmities. Mary called Magdalene, from whom seven demons had gone out, and Joanna, the wife of Cusa, Herod's household manager, and Susanna, and many others who provided for them out of their own means. Well, our big idea today from this text is that generosity has always fueled Jesus' mission. It was true when Jesus was alive, and it's still true today. And what we have here in Luke 8 is the beginning of a new ministry campaign of Jesus. Luke mentions several of them in his gospel, and here Jesus is starting his very important missionary campaign in Galilee. Now, Galilee was up in the northern region. It was distinct from Judea in a number of ways. It was more rural. Judeans thought of Galileans as their country cousin. There was more agriculture and fishing, and they were seen as religiously a little more lax. Politically, it was under a separate rule with Herod Antipas as the leader of that region in Galilee. Now, this is where Jesus chooses to locate his ministry starting in Luke 8. And so he goes into this northern region of Galilee, and as he begins this new chapter of ministry, I want us to consider today three lessons from Jesus on accomplishing ministry. So let's look back at verse 1. It says that Jesus makes his way through the cities and villages, proclaiming and bringing the good news. And so we see that Jesus here is an itinerant preacher who's going not just to the big cities, but even to the little villages with his ministry. Now, can you imagine the excitement of being in one of these rural villages and having Jesus and his entourage come to town? I mean, the kids would gather, the farmers would come in from the fields. I mean, he wasn't just content to stay in Judea. He was crystal clear on the importance of proclaiming the good news in every town that he visited, which brings us to our first lesson. Ministry must be multiplied according to your calling. Jesus knew what he was on the earth to do. He knew that the message of God's forgiveness needed to be spread. He had clarity on the fact that more people needed to know about this hope. He was in the business of multiplication. And it's interesting that he was going to the towns and villages that we read about here. Because if you look back just four chapters, this focus of his ministry was threatened. Jesus had just started his ministry back in chapter 4. He was tempted by the devil. He'd performed some healings, and he went into the region of Capernaum. And in verse 42 of chapter 4, it says, "And the people sought him, and they came to him, and they would have kept him from leaving them." Did you hear that? So there's this group of people who didn't know that they were doing it, but they were trying to distract Jesus from his calling by inviting him, by making him stay with them. Now think about that. It would be very natural if you were the ones who would receive the benefits from Jesus to just try to lock him down for yourself. These people were inadvertently saying, "Hey, Jesus, why don't you forget about everybody else and just stay here in our village? You can set up a school here, maybe a health clinic. I mean, you're pretty good at that healing stuff. We'll build a little amphitheater into the side of the hill here, and we can advertise, and you'll be the one teaching the people, and they can come here and hear you." Do you see how tempting that would be to get Jesus in one place where you'll benefit the most and just not let him loose? But look how Jesus responds in verse 43. "But he said to them, I must preach the good news of the kingdom of God to the other towns as well. For I was sent for this purpose. Now, Jesus comes back here to his purpose. He knew that his calling was as a missionary teacher, which means that he couldn't stay in one place. He had to go. And he was crystal clear on his calling. He wouldn't be sidetracked by other things, as good and helpful as those things may be. And so by the time we get to chapter 8, he's walking out this calling. He's going to the other towns that he mentioned. And this reminds us of a very real temptation in ministry. That is, that once we've found the hope and the love of Christ, we're tempted to keep it to ourselves. Jesus reminds us here that when there's good news, it's not just good news for a few. It's good news for everybody. And it needs to be shared. It needs to be multiplied. It needs to be spread. This reminds me of some of the times that I've talked with people from Grace who have said, hey, you know, what's the big deal about always trying to reach more people and multi-site and all this? What are we trying to do? Build Grace Church's kingdom? Let's just hunker down and let's take care of our own folks. I would simply say in response to that it's definitely not Grace Church's kingdom that we're building, but it's Jesus' kingdom that we're called to build. And the church, from the start, is a missionary endeavor, constantly going out to the least and the last and the lost and figuring out the best ways to introduce those people who don't know Jesus to Jesus. And listen, there are plenty of churches who will take the approach that says, us four and no more. We're just not going to be one of them. The gospel message must be multiplied and spread so that more people will know him. And this was the exact temptation that Jesus was presented with in Luke 4 when the people said, hey, don't worry about the other villages. You just stay right here and take care of us. And he said, no, I'm sorry. The good news is good news for everybody. I have to go and tell more people. So this passage, it also reminds us of the importance of staying true to your calling. Even when distractions come in, even when other attractive offers are made, we need to respectfully say no and turn our attention back to our purpose. You know, in that light, our forward project initiatives, they all have one unifying drive, and that is to reach more people with the love and the hope of Christ. And part of what is fueling these initiatives is the clarity of that calling that we believe that God has placed on our church. And so these four initiatives, they were arrived at through fasting and prayer and extensive conversation among our leaders. And I think this has application to you personally as well. What's your calling? It's not just Jesus that had a calling. It's not just Grace Church that has a calling. What's yours? What's that thing that you're supposed to do with your life? What would it look like to take the lid off of that stirring that Christ has placed in you and you can't seem to shake it off? Where do you have people telling you, no, stay here, keep it to yourself. You don't want to do that. It's too risky. But inside, you're about to explode because you know what you've been called to. You know, Jesus faced that temptation to keep his ministry small and safe, and he rejected it. And we face that same temptation as a church, and as a Christian, you'll face it too. But ministry is meant to grow. The hope of Christ is meant to be shared. And so we follow Christ's lead and we expand it and we share it. The second lesson about ministry from Jesus is this. Ministry requires money. Now, we always get so freaked out when this topic of money comes up. And unfortunately, some TV preachers have made this topic very difficult for other preachers to preach on and for people to hear about. Just hold your hankies up to the TV screen and receive a blessing, right? These guys. But here at Grace, we don't like to skirt around this stuff. And so we talk about money from time to time. And specifically in this passage, we're reminded that ministry requires money. And it sounds so simple and almost like we shouldn't even have to say it, but you'd be surprised how many people don't understand this truth. In our text, we see that three women are mentioned by name. And then Luke says, many others provided for them out of their means. This means that Jesus and his disciples had financial supporters, some of whom traveled with them to pay for the expenses of doing ministry. These donors generously met the needs of Jesus out of their own personal income. Now, I doubt Jesus was doing fundraising banquets where he got all the donors together, distributed pledge cards, and served dry chicken and limp green beans. But he did something, because there were many people, the Bible says, who were financial contributors. And we also know from the Gospels that the ministry had a treasurer named Judas. Now, he was the subject of the first of many Christian financial scandals. But when we put these pieces together, we realized that there was some process by which the money was raised, and it was collected, and it was secured. Some was saved for later use, some was spent. There was a financial engine that funded the ministry of Jesus. Some of you have never thought about that before, but it's true. And it's important for us to remember, lest we over-spiritualize this aspect of ministry. I got some heated feedback one time from someone who said that we should never talk about money at church, that we should never mention financial needs, because God will simply miraculously provide when there's a legitimate need, that God is just going to prompt someone to give and it'll be covered, but we should never talk about it. And I pointed back to this passage, because do you realize that when it comes right down to it, Jesus didn't need financial backers. Jesus could have miraculously funded his whole ministry. Why put people out? Why ask people to sacrifice, to provide for something that he could have provided for 1,000 other ways? I mean, he could have walked up to the front desk of the inn that he and the disciples were staying at and said, hey, thanks, we're going to need 7 rooms. These 12 are sharing, but I'm going to take my own, please. Double beds for them, king size for me. I can't stand Bartholomew snoring, right? And, oh, yeah, we'll just need keys for the 6 rooms. I don't need one. I can just pass right through the door there. And the innkeeper would be like, well, that's 1,000 shekels, please. And if Jesus had wanted to, he could have very dramatically just looked at the innkeeper and said, check your back pocket. The guys are amazed. They high five all around. It's like, you know, David Blaine street magic, right? He could have materialized money and had some fun with it all over the place. But instead, he called up Judas to the desk. Hey, Judas, bring the cash box up here. Do we have enough to make this work tonight? The question becomes why? Why doesn't Jesus just take care of it? Why did he set it up so that ministry requires money, especially ministries like his that were expanding and growing? I'm convinced that it's because he wants us to be part of it. He knows that something happens to our heart when we give that can't happen any other way. When we look at the 10 things that we want to buy on Amazon Prime for ourselves, and we look at this ministry need on the other hand, and when we choose this need, when we choose others over ourselves, our heart expands a little. We mature a little. We become a little bit more like Jesus, and we receive God's blessing. God says, I want to give you my blessing, but I can't put it into clenched fists. But in addition, when we give to ministry stuff, we get to be part of the life change that happens. I mean, he wanted those 3 women to feel like they were part of what was going on. They weren't major visible players in the story of Christianity, but they remind us that every behind-the-scenes gift can have major ministry impact. You know, people look at Grace and they think that we have these huge donors who help fund this place. We really don't. We have a whole lot of generous people who work behind the scenes to give what they can and participate in what God is up to. That's what these 3 women were doing. You know, every time Jesus healed one more person, every time he fed one more crowd, every time he made one more lame person walk or blind person see, every time he brought one more kid back from the dead, every time the disciples came back from a successful outing, I imagine them gathering up around a fire with the whole group and telling stories, and Jesus looking over at these 3 women and all the others who were supporting the effort and saying, "You guys were part of that today." You see, in his grace, he involves us in what he's doing through our giving. And so you see, ministry doesn't just happen. It requires funding, especially bold, progressive, leading-edge ministry that's going to reach new generations with the gospel. It doesn't just materialize out of nowhere, but God allows us to all be a part of it through our contributions. And the flip side of it is, when we don't participate, when we don't get to experience the satisfaction of knowing that we are part of the life change. And so for those 650 families who've participated in the Forward Project, I can't thank you enough. And listen, you get to rejoice in the lives that have been changed because of your generosity. One of the fascinating aspects of this story is the mention of these three women. Remember the passage says, and the 12 were with him, and also some women who had been healed of evil spirits and infirmities. Mary called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had gone out, and Joanna, the wife of Cusa, Herod's household manager, and Susanna, and many others who had provided for them out of their means. Which brings us to the third lesson about ministry from Jesus, that those who have received should give. Here's what we know about these women. They'd been healed from evil spirits by Jesus. They'd been set free from infirmities. Mary Magdalene had been released from 7 demons, which simply means that she'd been consumed by evil. 7 is the perfect number. And so she was perfectly consumed by evil spirits, and Jesus set her free. And she goes on to be one of the first witnesses of the risen Christ at the empty tomb in John chapter 20. Susanna, we don't know much about her other than that she fits this description here of someone who'd been healed by Jesus. But Joanna, she might be the most interesting of all. We find out that she's the wife of a man who's on Herod's leadership team. Remember Herod that I mentioned earlier, the Roman leader of Galilee? Well, Joanna's husband is on his leadership team. And this is fascinating because Luke is very diligent throughout his gospel in presenting this underlying theme of the conflict that existed between Jesus and Herod. In about the year 40 BC, a man who would come to be known as Herod the Great went to Rome to receive this title, the King of the Jews. Now, Herod was a brutal guy. He killed a bunch of his own wives and children because he was so paranoid. He was one who got a little antsy when 3 wise men came to him, remember this? And they said, hey, can you point us the way to find this baby that was born called the King of the Jews? He said, wait, I'm the King of the... Remember, he had this fairly strong reaction to that news? Well, he eventually died, and his kingdom was divided up between 3 of his sons, Herod, Herod, and Herod. It's kind of like George Foreman. Foreman named, 6 of his 12 kids George. Even his little girl, seriously, I'd like to meet my daughter, George, Anyway, the 3 Herods were all real doozies, just like their dad, and Jesus had run-ins with all of them, but especially Herod Antipas, the Tetrarch of Galilee. That's where this region that Jesus is in right now. And Jesus had some near misses with him during his ministry, even some verbal sparring in his teachings. I want to give you one example. Because every time Luke mentions Herod, including our text today, it's to contrast the powers of this world versus the powers of this new kingdom of God that's being established by Jesus. And so Herod Antipas is the one who beheaded John the Baptist. And again, just a charming guy. And when Jesus gets word that Herod had imprisoned John, he gets a little jab in. But you have to understand some history to get it. In ancient times, one of the primary ways that politicians communicated their authority was through coins. That they would put an image on the coins that represented them as a politician. And so we have some similar political images today. The elephant, it represents which political party? Yep, the Republicans. The donkey represents the Democrats, right? The duck, that's an insurance company, Affleck. But you get the point. In those days, Herod's symbol was a reed. It would show up on all the currency. Well, in chapter 7 of John, I'm sorry, after John is imprisoned, Jesus addresses the crowd saying, what did you go out into the desert to see? A reed swayed by the wind? He's talking about Herod. If not, what did you go out to see? A man dressed in fine clothes? He's talking about Herod. No, those who wear expensive clothes and indulge in luxury are in palaces. But what did you go out to see? You went out to see a prophet. You see, what he's doing, he's drawing this contrast between his kingdom and the kingdom of the day. And Jesus says, there's something inside of you all that's hungering for a better kingdom and a better king. So Jesus' teaching begins to set up this stark contrast to the kingdom of Herod, this reed swayed by the wind. And it has this revolutionary tone to it. And so here in our passage, Luke throws in this little detail that says, Joanna, one of Jesus' followers and main contributors, is on Herod's payroll. In other words, Herod writes the check, Cusa the husband deposits it, and Joanna turns around and she funds Jesus' ministry with it. I just love the subversiveness of it all, right? It's like Luke is saying, let's take some of the funds that we would use to build this world's kingdom or our own kingdoms and fund the only kingdom that's really going to matter in the end. Now, that being said, These three women were from very different backgrounds, very different points of view, very different life experiences, but they had two things in common. They were rescued by Jesus, and that rescue effort unleashed their resources for kingdom purposes. This isn't the only place that this happens in the scripture. If you go back to Luke 19, actually forward to Luke 19, to a guy that Jesus bumped into during a speaking tour one day. His name was Zacchaeus. He was a very wealthy man, but most of his wealth was illegally obtained. And Jesus goes to his house, he spends some time with him, and after a few hours, Zacchaeus emerges from his house and announces that from that day forward, he would give 50% of his income to God and to the poor, and he would repay all the people that he'd ripped off four times what he owes them. He was so grateful, you see, for the gift of salvation that he became a Christian all the way down to his wallet. And then Jesus came out of the house and he says, here you see the evidence of a changed life. You see, one of the evidences of the grace of God in your life, it's that you become generous with your stuff. And the question becomes, if your hands aren't opened, is your heart truly changed? And so in modern terms, it's called pay it forward. Something's been done for you, and so you do it for someone else. One of my favorite stories about this, and it'll bridge us to our update on the Forward Project, is the story of Lloyd and Margaret. Before we built our new building in McCain, and before we had sites in Girard and Harbor Creek and online services, Grace Church was located on a little plot of land on West 38th Street near McDowell High School in Erie. We'd outgrown the space, and we knew it was time to move. Lloyd was one of our key leaders at the time. So we decided to start raising some money in preparation for this new facility. And Lloyd and Margaret, they made an incredibly generous commitment to the project financially. We proceeded toward building, and right in the middle of the campaign, Lloyd was relocated for a new job a long ways away, Northwest Canada. And I was heartsick because they'd become friends and he was a great leader and they wouldn't be joining us in our new location. Do you know that for 2 years after they moved away, Lloyd and Margaret continued to send checks to Grace to fulfill their pledge for a church that they would never attend? You know why? Well, they'd been changed by the grace of God, first and foremost. But secondly, they did it for you. Now, they don't know you and you don't know them, but they knew that the day would come when, because of their generosity, hundreds and maybe thousands of people would get to hear more about Jesus. And they thought, that investment is worth it. We've received, so we should give, so that others might receive too. And you're sitting here today listening to this message in a large part because of Lloyd and Margaret and hundreds of others like them who said, we're going to take what Jesus has done for us and what this church has meant to us, and we're going to pay it forward. We're going to make sure that other folks get to experience what we have, because those who have received should give. And that was the idea behind the Forward Project that we launched 2 years ago. We said, you know, there are four initiatives. Two of them appear to be a little bit more internal, but even they are simply addressing some infrastructure issues that are going to allow us to better reach more people. And the other two are more outward focused. And I want to remind you of these initiatives, especially if you're new to Grace over these past couple years since we began. The first is Improve, which is an effort to repair and expand our current ministry facilities so that we can maintain safe and welcoming ministry environments for all attendees and all guests to our church. Second was Erase. This is an effort to reduce our debt and to free up resources to reach more people. And because of the Forward Project and our accelerated payments, I have good news today. We're going to pay off our one mortgage of $600,000 by this January 2016. This will completely eliminate one of our two mortgage loans. Because of that debt payoff, it's allowed us to refinance our remaining mortgage, lowering our interest rate, reducing the length of the loan, and still keeping the same monthly payment, so that we'll be debt-free in less than 10 years as a church. I'm so excited about that. It's going to free up tremendous resources for ministry. The third initiative is Connect, which refers to Grace Online. You know, when we started the Forward Project 2 years ago, Grace Online was just an idea. And this initiative of the four, it required the least amount of money, but has maybe the broadest impact. Grace Online launched in 2014, and nearly 7,000 people have experienced church online with us since the launch. We currently host 3 online worship experiences each week, averaging about 80 viewers a week. And people have logged in to church from Orlando, New York City, Charlotte, Lansing, Myrtle Beach, Nashville, Washington, Seattle, Los Angeles, and even countries like the Dominican Republic, Japan, and Italy. Grace Online has also been a great way for people who are local to get comfortable with Grace before attending one of our physical locations, as you saw in the case of Eli and Andrea's story earlier. This is a powerful tool to reach many more people with the gospel. I wanted to show you a short piece of what the Forward Project has allowed us to do. Because not only do people log in to see the sermon, but we're also able to translate some of our musical worship experience to the screen. And people can still go to our website and they can watch the sermon video anytime. But when you tune into one of our 3 online services each week, there's an entire worship experience along with online hosts who are available to chat and interact with those who are attending. So I wanted to show you a snippet of one of our most recent worship songs that we'll be using at Grace Online.
Tearing through the veil of darkness, breaking every chain you set us free, fighting for the furthest arch of your life for all to see. Tearing through the veil of darkness, breaking every chain you set.
Isn't that cool? Well, the final initiative is reach. We said that we would launch 2 new physical locations, and so last fall, Grace Girard was born. Currently, Girard has about 100 people in weekly attendance, and since we've been in Girard, we've welcomed 334 first-time guests. We've had 28 baptisms, 26 new members, and we're off to a great start. And in addition, we now have an office right on Main Street in downtown Girard so that we can maintain a presence in that community all week. The renovations of that space, the furnishings, they're all paid for from the Forward Project. Last spring, we captured 2 emotional life stories from people in the West County who attend Grace Girard. I recently went back and watched some of those stories, and I was in tears. These were a sampling of lives that were radically changed by Jesus because of our decision to go and because of your decision to give. And just like those 3 women from our story in Luke 8, you who have participated in the Forward Project, you've played a critical role in each changed life. And I just want to say thank you. You know, 2 years ago, we said that in order for our giving to be sacrificial, we might need to delay something or downsize something or let go of some stuff or simplify or maybe stop doing something that we're currently doing, simply so that we could free up some resources to reach people who don't know Jesus yet. And hundreds of you answered that call. And I just want to say thank you for your sacrifice. I know you didn't do it for my thanks. You did it out of obedience to Christ, but I'll thank you anyway. There's a second location that's part of this initiative. Girard was 1 of 2. And our elders and leaders have been praying and fasting for many months now. And we're ready to announce where we believe God is leading us next. We're not sure exactly what it's going to look like or even when it's going to launch, but we believe that God is calling us next to downtown Erie. Now, one of the things that we've learned in all of our readings and all of our research and all of our visits to other urban churches is that we need to go slow. Slower than we've gone before. It's all about relationships, and we have a lot to learn still. And so we're taking a learning posture right now to determine exactly what it is that God's calling us to. It may start as a multi-site location, or we may start with just having a presence in the city in some other way. And so our calling from the Lord is clear. The details of the calling are not at all. But we know that racial and cultural diversity will be one of the clear goals of this effort. We also know that we will soon be getting in touch with many of you who work in the city or have other interests in the city to help us with some of our learnings and planning. And there may come a time when we come to this congregation and say, okay, who's willing to relocate to the city to be part of what God's doing there? But that's down the road a bit. And so we're really excited and we're really hopeful and we're really nervous all at the same time, okay, about what God has for us next. But here's what we're gonna do today. Many of you received some mail letting you know about our desire to spend some time today to take a special offering so that we can finish well. We set out to raise $1.5 million to cover these four initiatives, and with cash and pledges, we still have about $150,000 gap to get there. Our big idea says today, remember, Jesus' mission is always fueled by generosity, and that's true of his mission right here at Grace. All of us today are gonna have the opportunity to give a special gift to help us cross the finish line. Now, there are some of you who made your commitment and you fulfilled your commitment, and that's it. That's what God asked you to do and you did it. Thank you. We celebrate you today. You don't need to do anything else unless God is compelling you to do something more. Some of you are still fulfilling your commitments, and we obviously need for you to continue to do that. And there are some of you who've been plugging along, giving your additional forward project gift each month or whatever it is that you've set up. And frankly, you've gotten used to it. You've gotten used to giving at that level. You're not really feeling it anymore. I mean, we'd love for you to continue to give at that amount to help us to close that gap. And there are some of you who are newer to Grace. You haven't been a part of this forward project at all. But man, you're missing out if you don't get in on it. I want to ask you to consider today giving a special gift to help us to get across that finish line. To be clear, these are gifts above and beyond your normal giving. To rob Peter, to pay Paul in this case doesn't help at all. You know, our last lesson from today from Luke 8 was that those who have received should give. And so I want you to think about something today. Think about how good God has been to you. You're alive, you're sucking air, that's a plus. You have health and strength and intelligence and abilities that enable you to learn. You live in America, 95% of the world is envious of you. Think of the sacrifice that Christ made to redeem you. Think about the promises in the Bible that God blesses those who are generous. And it's true that the single greatest investment that we can make is in the lives of people, bar none. And so now it's our turn to be like Lloyd and Margaret, to give now so that others will benefit, maybe even people that we will never meet, but they will know Christ because our generosity paved the way. So our site hosts are gonna come now and walk you through the process of responding today. God bless you guys.